So I was prescribed Percocet. And that's how it started.
This is Ashley. I'm not using her last name to protect her privacy. She's talking about how her addiction to opioids began, how it led her to heroin, and how she came out the other side.
What finally ended, you know, my battle, I'd say, with using was finding out that I was pregnant. I was clean at the time that I found out I was pregnant, but in the past I had relapsed so many times that, you know, I never usually made it past 3-4 months, but this time it was different.
Today, her healthy 6-month-old Jackson is sucking back a bottle in his bouncy seat.
Say hello. So yeah, this is definitely my reason to, you know, stay on the path of recovery. Once I did find out I was pregnant, you know, it was so easy for me not to relapse.
Ashley says taking methadone also helped her stay sober. The medication keeps a low level of opioids in her system, so she won't crave heroin, but it doesn't get her high. Like so many other addicts in recovery, Ashley credits methadone with saving her life. But when she found out she was pregnant, she worried it would harm the baby. Doctors said keep taking it.
In the beginning, it was tough because I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to get off methadone. And they were like, well, you can't, you know, not only can you lose the baby, but this is like, you're going to be in such a vulnerable emotional state. Like you really need something to, you know, help you with the cravings and stuff like that. So
doctors also told Ashley her son would likely go into withdrawal once he was born. And she agreed to participate in a study they were launching to find out which medications work best for babies like hers. As Ashley comforts her son in her Pawtucket apartment, she remembers how hard it was to watch his symptoms develop. Doctors couldn't give him medication until he was in bad shape.
He was shaking and sneezing over and over again, and, you know, he was really, really flushed, like his cheeks were really red. He had a temperature, you know, runny nose. You could tell he was just so miserable.
What if doctors could have started treating Jackson for withdrawal sooner, before his symptoms got so severe? That's one question a new study, the first of its kind, is trying to answer. Dr. Jonathan Davis is chief of newborn medicine at Tufts Medical Center in Massachusetts.
We know that about 60 to 80% of the babies will withdraw, but we have no idea who they're going to be. And so we keep every baby who's been exposed in the hospital 5 days. If they're fine, we send them home. If they start to withdraw, then we start treating them. But we don't treat them until the withdrawal is well underway. If we could predict up front in the mothers, and then what we could do if the babies were low risk, we'd send them home at day 2, like we do with other normal babies. And if they were high risk, why wait till they withdraw?
Davis thinks he can develop such a prediction tool simply by swabbing the mother's cheek for a DNA sample.
We did find an association with a small genetic change in the opioid receptor in the mother, the same one we found in the baby, that seemed to predict better or worse outcomes and the need for more treatment, longer treatment, etc.
Davis's study will also try to answer questions about which medication works better, methadone, the same drug Ashley takes to curb her cravings for heroin, or morphine, another opioid often used to treat pain. And they want to know, is one better in the short term, but worse in the long term? They're recruiting nearly 200 babies, some of whom will get morphine, others methadone. Then they'll follow up at 6 months and 18 months to see how they're doing.
And you can imagine how complicated it is to sort out some of these long-term follow-up issues, because is it the effect of the drugs the mother took in utero? Is it other environmental factors for the mother during her pregnancy?
Davis's colleague, Women and Infants pediatric psychiatrist Dr. Barry Lester, says answering those questions is urgent. In the past few years, the number of babies born in drug withdrawal, or neonatal abstinence syndrome, has quadrupled. That number is even higher in Rhode Island. The average cost of their stay in the hospital is more than $50,000. But doctors can't agree on the best way to treat them. Lester says the few research studies that have been done are already dated.
All but 3 or 4 of them were done before 2000. Okay? And they go back, you know, to the 80s. That's extraordinary when you compare that, for example, when we were so concerned about cocaine or methamphetamine. Hundreds and hundreds of studies.
Lester says we know a lot about the long-term outcomes for babies exposed to cocaine or methamphetamines. All we know about opioid-exposed babies is that their withdrawal symptoms are heartbreaking.
Out of the thousands and thousands of babies I've seen over my career, these are probably the most difficult. I mean, these are worse than, you know, cocaine-exposed babies or methamphetamine, or because they scream, and they're very, very hard to soothe.
Recovering addict and mother, Ashley, knows firsthand how hard it is to settle a baby like that. She found the medication helped, but it took more than that. Her son Jackson needed tight swaddling and a dimly lit, quiet environment. Now he's plump and pink. The suffering is behind him. But Ashley can't forget what he went through because she stayed on methadone.
It's your fault that your poor little baby is going to have to go through such a hard thing. Like, you know, they're so new to the world and they don't know or understand anything. And they don't realize that life isn't like that. Like, you know, that pain and sickness, like, that's not what life is all about. But at the same time, in order to be sober, I needed it, you know, at the time. So it's damned if I do and damned if I don't.
She's hopeful Jackson's distress was temporary and that he's going to develop into a smart, healthy little boy. And she hopes being part of the neonatal abstinence syndrome study will help other little boys avoid the worst of it. Kristen Gourlay, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Healthcare reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant from the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.